Step out of the shadows and into your sunshine. For generations, we have been limited by what society, colleagues, family members, spouses, and friends think that we should be or become. Slowly, we are molded into their best version of us. One day, we look in the mirror and wonder how we became so far removed from our inner light. These are the stories of powerful women and men who broke their chains and embraced their true purpose. They authentically share their most vulnerable moments and how they found the strength to step into their sunshine. Join us as we share our journeys toward breaking the chain of societal expectations for women and men around the globe. Step into a world of enchantment at La Forêt des Lumières, where magic meets mindfulness in the heart of Brittany, France. Unwind with immersive workshops led by master practitioners offering transformative practices to elevate your well-being. Embark on a transformative journey through lush forests and tranquil ponds, where every moment is exciting. Celebration of holistic living. Discover how to regain your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual power to take back your life. Join us at La Forêt de Lumière and awaken your senses to a world of possibility where every moment is an invitation to thrive. Visit www.rachelcoudronevents.com for more information. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to season three of Step Into Your Sunshine. Now is your time to rise and truly step into your sunshine. Today, it is hosted by yours truly, Rachel Coudron, the owner of Etsy Boutique Coudron's Curiosities and the mind behind Rachel Coudron Events, which will be hosted on July the 29th. May the 29th through June the 1st of 2025, my first event, La Forêt de Lumière in France, which will host holistic practitioners from all over Europe. And I'm super excited. Tickets go on sale on May the 1st. Now, today I have a repeat person that was featured earlier this year or last year. July the 17th was her first episode. You'll definitely want to check it out. She goes into her past stories, what she's been through, the tenacity to overcome the hardships of her life. And I really wanted her back. And so today, we're going to talk about all the new shifts that she's gone through in the last 9 months. But first, I would like for her to introduce herself.
Oh, thank you, Rachel, and thank you so much for having me. I am Rachel CK of the Breast Cancer Conversations, and I support women from diagnosis and beyond if they've received a breast cancer diagnosis. And I do that using oils, empowerment, and energy.
Perfect. Yay. I'm excited to dive into the things that have changed. So can you tell us, 9 months ago you were going down one path, and then just recently you've had a total shift, and I'd like you to dive into that.
So 9 months ago, and it isn't a complete shift, it's a focusing of, because I think that I was still unsure that I could do the thing that I was really, really being called to do. And it was absolutely the thing that I know in the supporting women. And since my diagnosis, which was 5 years ago, and it's actually 6 years in November. The little bit of the backstory is that I what absolutely was going to support myself naturally through getting through treatment and getting well, which I did. But it didn't come as easy as I thought it would, because there were a lot of opinions opinions and a lot of people that wanted me to not do that, but I knew intrinsically that that was exactly how I was going to be able to support myself. So I did, and I through all of the research and everything else that I did and spent actually put off having any treatment to find out what my path was going to be, I really had to dig deep to find the way to get myself through both what I called the green camp and the white camp, is in the all natural world that I lived in at the time and the medical world, and everybody trying to dissuade me. Whereas I knew what I was following was my absolute intuition as to how I needed to support myself. And I did decide to have medical treatment. But what I wanted was the gold standard of everything. And that journey wasn't easy. And actually, it was incredibly lonely when you feel like you're the only one that understands why you're doing what you're doing or why you're called to do what you do, which meant that part of my business at the time was essentially Rachel UK, that part of that was also then trying to help and support other women. And what I discovered, what I realized through last year, was it wasn't enough to just have it as part of something else. It wasn't good enough for the women I wanted to support. So I started to bring this part of my business out. The cancer conversations was born in as much as separating my social media out and having somewhere I could specifically speak to the women I wanted to reach. And then as we came through last year and I was delivering programs, I've been delivering the programs for the last 4 years. Seven Columns of Cancer Care is an integrative guide to women that have had a diagnosis to help them understand keto or other nutritional ways to support themselves, oxygen therapy, using oils to support themselves, using all of these tools to support themselves emotionally, and also going into the energetics, which is not the thing that many people talk about around a cancer diagnosis. So having then had that kind of support myself, I trained in that modality, and I and my programs are accredited by the International Practitioners of Holistic Medicine. So I support women post that diagnosis into and support them in all of the ways they can support themselves that actually doesn't only support them physically, but emotionally and energetically as well. So as I'm and I was really being drawn more towards making more of an impact with this and reaching more women, but I realized I couldn't do that whilst I was feeling fearful of putting my head above the parapet, and I found it a massive challenge to actually to show up and all of the stories. And actually, because when you are working in the natural part of the cancer support world, people are vile. As we know, in many industries, people are vile. And I've had to just really thicken my skin, toughen up, really lean into what I know I'm called here to do, which is to help other women going through a cancer diagnosis that want to support themselves naturally and not feel alone. And the underpinning of all of that was those empowered choices and understanding what those choices are, because many of them get hidden. And understanding, and when we understand what those choices are, and we can make empowered choices by having more information, is actually then we get into empowered living, regardless of where you are at on that cancer journey. That having the ability to increase that sense of hope within yourself, having the ability to find joy in every day, no matter what, like come what may. And what I want to share with anyone out there that's listening that's had a cancer diagnosis and that's going through it is that there will be very, very few things that you have felt or thought that I haven't felt too. And all the way through this last almost 6 years, the thing that I did realize was that there was a lot of support around, but nobody actually really knew how I felt because they hadn't been through it themselves. And that's where the powerful piece comes. That for all of the women that I've supported, and there, I know that there are thought processes they go through and emotions they have that they think and feel that they're alone. And I know that because I did, and they're not. And even when they are the deepest, darkest thoughts, that there won't be one that I hadn't had all the way through my journey to here. And now this really is about stepping out, and 2024 for me was about really broadening the impact that I can have with this support, and really offering deep support, not just for the women that have just had a diagnosis that were losing their minds, and looking at their children and their children's lives flash before their eyes, and being able to come out of the fear to feel really empowered in the choices that they're making to support themselves, but also to support the women that come through all of that and find themselves in a world they no longer recognize, with emotions they don't recognize, with hormonal shit storms they don't recognize, and often in bodies they don't recognize as well. And that can also then be a tricky place to navigate. So my support spans all of that from a real learned, a real lived place, but also having really done the work and have been able to dive into how to support from an energetic and emotional perspective. There are many people you can go out and find nutritional support from, just for example. And I do cover it in Seven Columns, but there are so many people that you can find to support you, for example, for women in business, and for women that have come through major challenges. And what I've realized is I've been given a really specific gift and a really specific experience, which is for mums actually going through this, and that you are holding your babies so tight every night, not knowing how long you get to do that for. That's a horrendous feeling. And how do you manage that? And also, and how do you run a business while you're doing it? So that's what the breast cancer conversations, as it's now called, because I know that I'm here to support women that have had a similar experience to me. The breast cancer conversations is here to make some noise and is here to have a really positive impact in the world of the women that have gone through or have heard those words that you have breast cancer. That ricochets throughout your whole life, throughout your whole body, through your world, into your family, and into your business. And what I really focus on is that energetic imprint that that can have, and the trauma that we carry from that. And trauma is a really big word, and it includes trauma with a capital T, that can include persistent tries of, going in for chemotherapy, and those persistent tries to get something in the back of your hand that are incredibly painful, that mean you are everything energetically in you says, I can't go back and do that again. Some of those nuances that nobody else would experience or understand, that actually can stay with you. So for me, it's really wanting to emphasize the importance of the emotional impact and energetic impact and how that can spread through our family. And the big thing for me is that when we understand that and support it, you can recover quicker. You can recover emotionally. And not that everything's about speed, because it isn't. But the way that I work with my women, it aids them to get through so much of the experiences they've had and be able to dissipate all of that fear. And the bigger conversation when we come through recovery is how we live without fear of it all happening again. There's another big part of the conversation, which is why my being in the breast cancer conversations, the majority of my time now, because there are so many ways that women like me need support.
Wow. Rachel, when you talk, I feel like my heart increase in the pace of the way it's beating, because it's just my heartstrings are pulled to what you're saying and they're pulled to their story. Why I don't have the same experiences that you have within your life. I feel it, and I can feel your emotion coming through. And even as a mother, it's like I just really feel aligned with your story. And I think another beautiful gift that you have is your ability to convey your experiences very emotionally and very intelligently. And I think between your experience and your ability to communicate, is there's a beautiful gift that you have that many others don't. And I think another thing that you said that I could really resonate with is that being called. The very first thing you said, the being called to do something, but being too afraid to take the step fully. And I've experienced that in the last 9 months as well, where for me, and
rather than a shift energetically, it was like a total shift in the direction that I should be pointed. And I think it's very brave and quite an inspiration for me to watch you step into like your purpose and your sunshine. It's like, oh, I can do that too. If she's done that, then I could be brave enough to do that too. And so I want you to know, not only are you inspiring those that you're speaking with every day through your cancer conversations, but just by sharing your story, you're also empowering all of those just like myself.
Bless you. Thank you. And likewise, actually. And I think that's the beauty of women working together, supporting each other, that we do lift each other up because you have an incredibly empowering story too. And I think that's what this podcast has, just coursing through it. That this, and I'm really grateful for you bringing this to light, all puns intended, that it's never easy. No matter how it looks on the outside, don't think for a minute that even the most successful businesswomen haven't felt all of those, that full range of human emotions and the fear. And the way that I describe it when I talk about fear and I support other women in talks about fear is we are fear walking. I don't think for a minute that the women around you aren't doing the same. The difference is when you have a community, right? The difference is when you feel that connection. And that's what I wanted to create, is that life, the world keeps turning, the moon keeps circling, we keep being impacted by its energies. Everything's going on. And that when these big life crises come, whatever that may be, and yes, in my specific world, it's for those women that have had that diagnosis, is, but my son still needed to go to school and back. I still needed to do the school run. I didn't do it every day. I didn't manage to do it every day. And I had friends that lived on the street that could do that. And this, the whole thing around women and women's communities and the ones that every individual person is building, be that in a group of friends or through a business and a community, and what you're building through this podcast is so important. And for no woman to feel alone in that. And I think that's what's really important, isn't it? And some of us, I don't believe there's one person without a purpose on this planet, and none of it's altruistic. Every single person, every single soul is here to raise those around them and to reach and farm those that aren't immediately around them. So everyone has that sense of community and support and love, and that they can be heard, and that somebody can say to them, I get it. I get it. No matter what you've been through, I get it. And that for me is really important. And I almost would look up to the heavens and be like, you're joking, aren't you? Oh my God, this is so massive that I feel I'm being asked to do. And I've been fear walking pretty much every day. But the big thing for me, particularly around the cancer conversation and the breast cancer conversation more specifically, is that sense of fear is not doing us any good. It's not supporting our immune system. It's not helping us sleep. So I always start with the fear conversation because, yes, we can be fearful of something and still moving through. But I really want everyone to understand that that feeling is something we can support. We can acknowledge it. It's like you get in the car and you're driving, and we know that fear is there, but we want him to get in the back seat. Get in the back seat. You're not driving. You're not navigating where I'm going. You are, I'm not giving you the power. I'm acknowledging you're there because actually, the acknowledgement of it rather than the denial of it existing actually is much better for our nervous system. I'm working from that place is, yeah, this is making my heart race a bit faster, but let's go with there's no difference in our body between fear and excitement. So, how do we do that? And this, then, if we bring that back to that conversation of, women having heard the worst news, I'm going, okay, that seems a big ask for me to move this from fear to excitement, but let me show you how. And that's my message, is let me show you how, because I've done it. I have had so many professionals around me that have spoke to me about things. And the bigger thing for me is I can tell in their language they don't get this. Try as you might, try as you might, you don't get it. And you don't understand the emotions that I have in the middle of the night with my son sleeping in the next room, and of me being faced by somebody of my biggest fears. How do I deal with that while I'm also trying to heal my body? How do I deal with this? Well, let me give you some tools. That's what I want to do, is to be able to make the tools that I use still every day. Every day I still use them. The fears are different, but every day, the bigger place that fear can come in. So when women have just had a diagnosis, we switch into survival mode, and actually things get where we can give me a plan and I'll follow it, and we do. And that's where the resilience and the tenacity comes up from our boots, because we do. It's something within us, especially as mothers, we crack on. When we come out the other side and that survival mode relaxes and that response dies down, then we can have so many other emotions and different fears, and our body's actually trying to then cope and deal with what we've been through and being held in that state for so long. The actual survivorship and the recovery part, and some people don't like that word, but actually that is where we're in. What I want is thrivership. What I want to bring women in my world to is a place of being able, yes, to find the joy. We're not interested in toxic gratitude. Of course, we're grateful we're alive. And that will be many responses that we hear of, I'm actually finding this difficult. Oh, but you're here. Oh, but you're here. Just, you know, you're not so grateful. Like, just be so grateful. Of course, we're grateful. Of course, we're grateful. But we also get to have a quality of life and to want to find that and find the people that can help us find it. And sometimes we have to fight for it. I'm really conscious of language around any cancer conversations, and the fighting and the FU cancer crew isn't the way that I approach all of this, because what I want us to be doing is loving ourselves more, loving our bodies more, especially in the area where cancer may have occurred. The other big thing I'm really, really passionate in people understanding, and sometimes it's a bigger leap and a bigger ask, is understanding how we got to here. And understanding that connection between the physical, the emotional, and the energetic body. And once we can understand, when we get out the other side of all of the treatment and whatever else it is we've decided and chosen to have, because it is a choice, when we get into that part, in the after part, and it feels like just surviving, that the step into thriving comes with understanding, how did I get here? And that bigger step of being able to move beyond living in fear of recurrence and adjusting to a life that's very different for many women after it's all finished, is actually when we get to the understanding of how we got there, then actually taking real radical ownership of how we live our lives now. And the thing that brings me the most joy is seeing women come out of survivorship into just thriving, and thriving without living within that conscious state, even in a conscious state that might be a very healthy conscious state of, I'm eating this so that, or I'm exercising so that, because I've heard this is really good for, you know, not having it all happen again, and actually being able to move into living a life. And it took me a long time to get to that point, but actually living without being in the fear. So fear is a big topic for me to help support other women with.
My goodness. you activated many things in me, but I thought the very first thing you talked about fear. And I feel that no matter where you're at in your life, your experiences, everybody knows what fear feels like. And it might be when they're young, a fear of being rejected from their peers. As they get older, it might be fear of if they're going to go to university or if they're not, if they're going to start their first business, if they aren't, fear of becoming a mother, giving birth. And then, of course, fear if you're diagnosed with breast cancer or other types of cancer, fear of leaving your home country and moving to an entirely different country, not knowing the language like I did myself. And I feel that lots of people are very familiar with fear. And I love how the first thing that you said was taking them from feeling fearful to being excited, or a more positive, happy outlook on the situation. And I thought that I have never heard such an approach, especially around cancer, because every time for me, cancer almost feels like this really negative, really heavy, very closed off, don't talk about it with other people type of subject. And so when you talk about it in a more positive, uplifting light, it's quite a mind shift. Well, and when I thought about fear, about following my intuition, what my body was telling me, and the same with you, is I also took some time to think about what if I don't? What if I just stay in this fear, don't take that step? What's going to happen? And what's going for me, I'm very passionate about mental health and physical ailments outside of cancer, and how doctors put you on variety of medications and never really give you something that heals you, just limits the symptoms for your entire life. And though that's where my passion comes from, because just like you, it's lived passion. It's like I've gone there, I've been through it, and now I'm on the other side. And so when I thought about if I don't follow this calling, then all those people are going to suffer in the same way that I did. And they're going to feel like they don't have support, and they're going to feel like there are no other choices, or that their life isn't worth living. And they're going to become hermits and smaller versions of themselves, because they feel that they don't belong in society anymore, or they feel like their problems are too large and nobody will listen to them. And so for me, it's like it feels like deep in my stomach, I can feel this like passion and this burning desire to help people. And I feel that it's the same thing for you. Would you like to talk about how? And like the other side of if you didn't choose to put both of your feet into the cancer conversations.
Yeah. And that's not, it's not a good feeling of if you don't follow that calling, what is the impact? What is the impact? Well, the impact then is actually the message then that you are sharing out into the world is not necessarily going to be heard or seen. And the physical impact of you staying, and you're right, it's just everything in your world would get smaller. It's almost like I pause going, I don't even know how to articulate that because I can feel it, the feeling in my body. And it's kind of what I was feeling as I came through last year. But we know about universal calling, from wherever people believe that comes from, and I will talk about God and the universe in the same sentence, and I'm very comfortable with that, is that that calling is almost, it's impossible to miss, because when you ignore it, you will get the biggest almighty shove. And I've had a number of these in my life, and one of the very first ones was my knowing of my knowing of needing to leave what I was doing before to come and share what I was learning in my world about natural support within a family home and getting toxins out of your house, which is where it all started. The final thing, because I had not been listening, was I blacked out in my car on the M1. And that was one of the very first massive shoves that I had in my life, which was you have to stop, keep burning yourself out, and keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. And that is 8 years ago now. And that was what completely changed the trajectory of my life to then come into supporting women with their well-being. And especially in supporting women with their children and supporting them naturally. That's how all of this started, and learning more about hormones and the impact that processed foods, toxins around the home could have on your hormones and on anxiety and on sleep. That was where I started. Sleep was my superpower. And that shifted when I had my diagnosis, because all of the foundations I'd built understanding about well-being, I was then applying to myself after my diagnosis, knowing the impact, the energetic impact that all of those things can have in your body, and knowing you are, I'd had that huge shove off the pat I was on onto this one. And who knew that that would then lay the foundations of where I am now, because I couldn't have just done what I'm doing, laid all that foundation those years before. But the big conversation here as well is that those nudges are there. Your body is talking to you all of the time. Message, which was something that I then discovered on a whole other level, was the medical profession are incredible. Incredible. Some medicines are incredible. However, some of them are also just covering up. We're not working with the root cause, which is where I ended up really focusing my work on the root cause, because cancer doesn't just appear. Most major physical challenges don't just appear. It takes time for them to manifest. And that whole conversation that is a whole other comment, but that whole conversation also is about, so if we are relying solely and wholly on medication because it deals with something in that first instant, and we want to be able to reduce pain, of course we do. But what I call everyone to do is then look at, so what's created it? And let's dive a bit deeper rather than numbing. And that's what I've done for years. It's what I've done for years, was just numbing everything out. It never occurred to me as a woman with a cycle when I had one, but why? Why is that happening? Why is my body responding this way? And the bigger conversation for me now, and again, specifically around the breast cancer conversations, is to allow the space for women to ask that question without fear of judgment, without fearful stop, is to, and how did I get here? And to hold the space for women to feel all the emotions while they discover what created this then. And that can be a very bitter pill to swallow when, like me, you thought it was just genetic. So we don't have any involvement in any of this. It's just genetic. Well, it wasn't for me, even though I'd grown up and come from a family where breast cancer was historically very present. Nobody was more surprised than me that actually that wasn't the case. And I had to accept that my lifestyle and my burning out persistently, consistently, and being a hormonal mess, that all of those things can lead to dis-ease in the body, but it's not the only thing. When we look at traumas with a little t and traumas with a big T that come throughout your life, especially those from childhood, are creating an imprint that ricochet right throughout your adult life. And this is the bit that I help women get underneath and help women, because those are the things that lie underneath all of the fears as well. Those are the things that create the massive emotional triggers. And actually, when those things are firing all the time, it's very hard to heal on emotional and energetic level. So yes, there's a very big physical conversation. But what I invite women to do when they come through all the dealing with the physical things is to be prepared to step into a space and understand this conversation around emotions and energetics, because that is what creates dis-ease in the body. And that's where we get those physical manifestations of things becoming, things happening in our body that create all manner of challenges, not just cancer, all manner of challenges. And understanding that there is something that goes way, way deeper than the diagnosis, way deeper. And that's my invitation for me on the other side of going through all of the things, is to look into, how did I get here? And this is one of the things that massively helps moving into thriving, not just surviving, and getting beyond that huge sense of fear of, if we understand how we got here, we can understand how we can change things in our world and in our life and in our lifestyle to really support ourselves, mind, body, and soul, into staying well. And I think that's a really
Absolutely.
Big conversation to have.
I 100% agree. And it takes me back to some of the things that you said earlier, combined with what you just said, is at the very beginning, you talked about people's opinions about what to do, what not to do, and trying to stop you from making certain decisions and whichever else. And that is also in perfect alignment with my own life, is that when I got to my breaking point, I was like, I am desperate to do whatever is necessary to change my current state. Is there was all kinds of opinions about what I shouldn't be doing or what I should be doing, or you're on medications, you'll feel better eventually. Really? And I never felt better eventually, and that's really what. I continued to feel worse, and it wasn't just my physical symptoms. It was like my mental health was just crashing, simultaneously because I was never getting better. And for me, I didn't have a specific diagnosis. It was like I just felt like I was sinking because every doctor I went to was never giving me an answer, and all I wanted was an answer. And when you talk about, I love the sentence that cancer doesn't just show up, because it's the same for anxiety and depression. They don't just show up one day. They're just not, you click on a light and they're there. It's all about what you just said about the energetics, your past experiences, what you've lived through as a child, your trauma with the small T and your and big T, as you go into adulthood. And I had to go through that experience as well to realize that it wasn't just like, oh, I would have this pill or this therapy and physical symptoms gone. I'm totally healed. Life is good. Never think about it again. No, it wasn't like that. It was really like I felt like an onion sort of uncovering a different layer of myself every time a new thing would come up. And I went to counseling, and then I went to pelvic physical therapy, then I had to go to cold water therapy, then I had to do acupuncture. And just like every single time, it was like part of me felt like, is it ever going to end? But then also part of me was like, wow, look at everything that I'm learning about myself and I'm picking about how to take care of my body. Because for me, I didn't start off with like a foundation of understanding and then expand on that with my diagnosis. It was like I knew nothing and was at the lowest point I've ever been in my life and decided I can't do this. I can't go down this path anymore. And so learning that the things in my life that were affecting me both mentally and manifesting in my body physically actually had to do with my experiences and my mindset and like my views of the world, what I was eating, my lifestyle was very shocking. It was very discombobulating for me. It felt very uncomfortable because it was like then you were faced with actually taking ownership of the part that you were responsible for.
Yeah, absolutely true. And our stories, although when you look at them on paper, feel very different. They're not. They're not. It's a similar story. And we know from the women that we know and in our communities that this is happening everywhere, and that how it shows up in the body doesn't really matter how it shows up in the body when it's a dis-ease. And the thing for me, and that's with a hyphen in the middle. You know, it's that disease in the body. That's where the, you know, the, well, that will show up in a different place for different people, but it's showing up. And it's showing up, but then it gets covered. And we're not, you know, the NHS are incredible, but they can only reach to a point. And that when you're working with a, you know, particular medical professional, they let's just say for a second, we know they have dedicated their entire life to their gift and their calling. So this isn't about decrying it, it's about understanding how do we create that ease in our body again. And if we need something to support it, that then gives us the space to find out what's going underneath. My biggest issue is that from a medical profession, we're not looking for that. Because God love them, they don't have the time because there's a queue of 100 people waiting. So there's also that as well. What I want is for everybody everybody that is listening, that is going through any physical challenges, to be willing to look underneath at the root cause of, and how did this get here? And if you don't know, then find the person and ask. Because there are many of us that are helping work underneath the root cause of what's going on with you here and how did it get to here. But also to be able to take a deep breath and be open and willing to discovering that. And it can be hard when you feel like I've now got to blame myself for this diagnosis. No, it's not about laying blame, but it's about how we move on from here. How do we get from here not living in fear? Or how do we get from here with things getting worse? It's understanding that connection between the emotional, the energetic, and the physical body. And only when we do that can actually we create ease in the body. It's the only when we do that can we really understand who we are, what makes us tick, how we thrive, what our body really responds well to. And if we stay busy, and if we stay busy and we stay not prepared to actually look at it and take some ownership and make changes, that's the thing, isn't it? That both of us have been asked to do is take, I heard somebody talk about this, like radical responsibility. Radical responsibility. And I should quote whoever I heard saying that, and I can't think because I listen to lots of things, but that's it. And I thought, that's it. It's absolute radical responsibility for our own well-being and not keep giving our power away to other people to prescribe something that just covers it up so that we can carry on doing.
Oh
And
my
actually, if we
goodness.
don't slow down, you never get to, if we don't slow down, we don't get to listen to our bodies. And I know we both find that hard, right? I'm like, we're cut from the same cloth, not only with the same name, but we find that difficult because that's in our personality. And actually, being gifted the ability to slow down, like that's one of the biggest gifts anybody can give us, to slow our heart rate down, to give us the tools that when we're somebody that struggles to sit still, give me something that helps me do that. Give me a tool, give me something to listen to. Tell me to get out in the woods for a walk, even if I'm stomping. Get into nature. Nature's the most perfect example of how we work as women. Am I right? You're laughing, you're smiling and laughing because I know we're right, aren't we? Is that how do we get to slow down to listen to what our bodies are telling us because they're talking to us all the time? And this was where such a big part of my work has been for so long. But what also has come out of the last 9 months, to go full circle to the first question, is there are so many more women ending up on this side of that breast cancer diagnosis. And outside in the UK, this is outside of the NHS, there isn't enough knowledge necessarily of the help that's available. There are some incredible charities that can support you through what you're going through. And there are women like me that are here to hold your hand and guide you through this space into living beyond the fear. And so that going from right from the diagnosis. The thing that I probably haven't talked about is, yes, and you mentioned this earlier, so I wanted to pick back up on it, if I may, that when we hear about cancer, and let's talk about breast cancer specifically, we have these images because that's what we're shown. And this is why I want to change the narrative around breast cancer and how you can support yourself. You just need to choose to also support yourself. That we see these images of women with no hair, with either no wig, awful wigs, turbans, all of the things, and that are very, very poorly. Now, I'm not saying that that isn't the case, and actually, for many women, that is the case. The thing that put me on this path is that wasn't the case for me. And it wasn't the case for me because of all of the things I was adding in. We go right back to the beginning of this story, which was that my first oncologist, when I said, "So what do you recommend?" I already had an idea of what I wanted to do to support myself naturally because it was the world I lived in. What do you suggest that I do to support myself while I'm going through this? And his reply put the fire in my belly. There was already one there, but he like literally lit it up. that is still here with me. And his words, with a little girlfriend wag of his finger, was, there is nothing that you can possibly do about this situation. And in that moment, I took a breath. I knew I would never be in a room with this man again. And I knew that what he said was lies. Also in my mind that I carried with me was, how many other women, or is this one man saying this too? But how many other women are many of the medical profession saying this too? Disempowering women going through something that is the biggest challenge of their lives is unforgivable. When we know there are so many ways that we can support ourselves and our mental state, the biggest challenge going through that cancer diagnosis isn't the physical one. It's not always the physical one, it's the mental one. Whilst you're trying to raise your children and trying to, maybe still trying to keep a business running. So that for me was such a massive thing. I didn't realise until the end of my treatment, while I was thriving and people were talking about, oh, here she is, look at her, you know, you look amazing. And I would say to every medical professional, do you want to know what I'm doing? And every single one would say no. That in supporting myself with oxygen therapy and juicing and energy work and amazing oils to keep my emotions calm so that my immune system wasn't further challenged, supporting my immune system naturally, all of those things and understanding how did I get here meant that I wasn't hospitalized in between each chemotherapy treatment, which until the very end of my treatment, I didn't even know was a thing. And as I looked back, realizing that I was going through this journey, and so were my family, very differently than anyone else around me and anyone else I then looked into or anyone else that then contacted me for help, that without that, I have absolutely no question that I may not still be here. And that for a medical profession to deny women, and it's not just that. So I also work supporting holistic therapists in guiding their clients through this journey. So when holistic therapists are told you're dangerous for these clients, you must stop seeing them. So they do. I was turned away by so many. I've had many of my clients turn up in pieces because they have been rejected by their own therapists and other ones they've tried to see. So for me, what was important is to try to bridge that gap as well between the holistic therapists who I know are going to be really impactful in saving the lives of these women. Because it's that being able to get their state into a much calmer state, supporting their nervous system, supporting their immune system, supporting their mental well-being, that is a massive piece in surviving. So holistic therapists are being told you can't do this. You have to stop seeing your client. The client themselves, their whole energy and everything about them goes down. They feel more rejection. And medical profession saying to the clients as well as the holistic therapist that this all has to stop. That's the part for me where we start to have more and more conversations of how we get to bridge that gap. That is a huge part of not just surviving, but thriving. For sure.
Absolutely. And I think talking to you, knowing my own story, talking to other holistic practitioners, it's incredible how similar stories are, because many of the people I've spoken with for my upcoming event, they went in to their modality because of the same reason. They were told that they didn't have any control. They were told that they couldn't make any difference. They were told that, you know, you're just going to have to take these medications, or no diet is going to change the outcome. All of those different variations, but all ending in the same result, where it was like, no, I refuse to accept that I don't have any power. I refuse to accept that I don't have any say in the direction of my life and or in my health. And so collectively, and no matter our speciality, our specialty, is that we chose to make that decision. It was just the refusal, the blunt refusal that I don't have any impact. And
yeah, absolutely.
We just refuse to believe that. And because it's the same for me, when we talk about doctors, and we talked about this on the last podcast, is that we both become so inflamed and like really passionate because of our experiences. Because for me, when I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism, and I was going down the beginning of my alternative path, and I went to my endocrinologist and I told him that I was no longer taking levothyroxine, but I was going to take talc to manage my thyroid. And just like you, we'll never forget it. He was facing the wall, wouldn't even look at me. And he goes, "Oh, well, it's probably better for you anyway, because it actually puts iodine back in your body." And in that moment, it was like, what? I almost wanted him to kind of like argue with me or fight with me about it, but just as it was worse, the agreement that, like, oh, well, yeah, it's better for you. And I thought to myself, how many millions of women are suffering or on lifelong doses of levothyroxine for their thyroid, and they don't even know that they could be taking kelp? And then on top of that, like on top of the doctor actually saying that it was better for them, when I talk to other women about potentially taking kelp or asking their endocrinologist about kelp or just trying it out, testing out how it would assist the levels and maintain the levels of their thyroid appropriately, many of them are just like, I can't do that. Like, as if what I do is a joke. Like, well, I can't do that. That's not approved by my doctor. I have to take levothyroxine, and that's the only option. But it's sad and it's infuriating and it lights up my passion and the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing, because I know that that's not the only option. And it's just like you said, when doctors say, well, going to an alternative therapist or a holistic therapist is like life-threatening, it could be dangerous for you. It's so infuriating because there's many things that they, like you said, they don't have the time to talk with all through all the options or the time to be educated in every potential domain or side effect of what could happen by one participating in chemo and medications, but also on the alternative sides of all the holistic therapies that exist. There's just not enough time. And when I, one of my posts that I always do for my event is I caption it with "Doctors don't have all the answers." And I tell you what, it is incredibly, it garners a lot of attention and it's very controversial because I grew up in the US, and we have what I would like to say is a healthy understanding of challenging doctors, where they want to know, lots of Americans want to know why. They want to know, like, how did you come to your conclusion? Is that the only option? Why should I do it this way? And they challenge you as a doctor. Whereas living in France, it's a completely different culture where whatever the doctor says goes. There's no questions. There's no maybes. There's no ifs. Well, what about this treatment over this one? What about if we like add this into the approach of the treatment of whichever situation? There's just whatever doctor says goes. And that has been incredibly difficult for me to just accept. And I just can't. Like, it's just not in my makeup. Just like when we decided that there was something, we were taking back our power. There was something about that we had control over the direction of our lives. And when other people around me are like, no, whatever the doctor says goes, it just sends like blaring alarms through my mind of like, we can't allow this to happen. We can't, it's, I mean, I feel like it's almost like an epidemic. We can't allow the system to take on the belief and convince others that they're all knowing, that they have all the answers, and there's nothing that you can do, and that you have no power, and that all the power belongs in someone else. And it's just like you said, it's not just genetic. It's not just because you've had two other different diseases. It's not just because you've had 14 different surgeries, or all the things. There's a whole story to be told. And I know that we're in perfect alignment there. It's just getting that, bridging that gap between Doctors are very intelligent. They're very knowledgeable within their fields, but also the understanding that they don't know everything and they don't have the time to know
Yeah,
everything.
I totally agree. And the other thing there is women, people that are not doctors are also very intelligent. It's
Yes.
just not necessarily the field that they chose to train in. But when it comes to advocating for our own body, it doesn't mean we don't have the same level of intelligence. It's just we've chosen to use ours in a different field. Oh. Did you hear that? My dog's saying hi. It's not even, and I think that's what happens sometimes is it becomes of it's oh, because they're a doctor, it means everything they say is right, and everything they say is right for me. And we're not, I'm not actually saying that everything they say isn't right in their field. My brother told me something, I recount this tale all the time, because I can remember coming back and being, oh my goodness, we said this. My oncologist also said, you can go home, drink vodka, and eat donuts. It doesn't matter. He was Russian. Made sense to him, made no sense to me. And my brother's saying this one thing right at the beginning was, don't go into an Italian restaurant and ask for Chinese. And it took me a heartbeat to go, that makes so much sense. So don't go to somebody who has spent their entire life, this is their life's work, and they're in oncology. They're going to give you the best advice about oncology, about the best drugs. They know all of that. Don't then go asking them about all the other things because they don't know. Of course, they don't know. And every single medical report and test and everything for him in oncology was. All of those tests were done with women or possibly men, but in my case, probably women for breast cancer, let's say, is that all of those tests were done with women doing nothing else. So we have to have also that perspective of they're coming from the best place that they're in. It's just not necessarily the only best thing for us. So in my mind, it was right, I want gold standard of all of it then. I want the best of all of it. I will choose. I want the best. Medical, I want the best drugs. Now, here's the thing that came up as I was going through my treatment, and I did choose chemotherapy in the end because I didn't feel that I had enough examples of women coming through thriving, not doing that. And time is a really, really good topic to talk about, which is again why I ended up doing what I did. Because of all of the time, I literally stopped everything and dedicated the first few months of my life post my diagnosis. I said to the doctors, I'll be back. And they're a bit like, what do you mean? I'll be back. I'll be back and I'm going to let you know what I'm going to do. Not the other way around. So I literally booked us on a plane to get us out of the house, away from distractions, to be able to read, research, and also for me to have the conversation with my husband about this is the way I want to go in. And I really needed to have him understand that and to be on at least in the same book, if not on the same page. The bigger thing for me about time was that of, and I don't stop looking into cancer support and research because everything's changing all the time, is that all of that, it took me months devouring and understanding and going through these massive, massive tomes of books about integrative support and finding research that takes time. When you've just had your diagnosis, that's not the thing you have because you're being put on a conveyor belt and your surgery is next week or your first chemo is the week out. Everything is rushed. And the one thing I implore anyone listening to do that this affects is just press pause for a second to take a breath. And also that what I realized that not everybody has all of that time that I had. They don't necessarily always have in those moments of trauma the ability to say just please just wait a minute. So for me to put the program together, the seven columns of cancer care is so that they can get all of that research and all of that information and all the things, because what I was asked all the time is how did you do it? What did you do? How did you do it? I can't kind of do that in it, even in an hour conversation. So I was delivering that as a live program and it's just gone where it's recorded. So women that are going through all of this, we have nights where we don't sleep and we have nights where we're just looking for answers. And I wanted to make that really, really accessible. So as of January, that's accessible at any time, particularly when you've started treatment, you're on steroids and you're awake all funny times of the night. Rather than go shopping for jewelry, which is what I did, rather than go shopping for just stuff to try and fill that gap in you and try and find some thing to help support you, I knew in the middle of the night I wanted something that was really accessible for women to listen to get through years of research, lit in seven columns, in seven modules, so they can devour it and understand it and get to understanding how that all those different things can support them much more quickly. And all of this, you know, there are tomes and stacks and piles of books that I went through and courses that I went on and the training that I've been on and the things I've qualified in, they're all in there so that you can get to that quicker. And like I'm saying, it's not about speed, but many women won't necessarily be able to even find the mental capacity to do all of that themselves, finding the bits in all of those books and in finding all of that research in all of the different places. We know that when fear comes and anxiety rises, our brains don't work the same way. So for me, it's always been about how do I make this easier? I make this easier because I get more visible. I talk about the breast cancer conversations. I'm prepared to have them, even when they're really hard, is to have those conversations no matter what, wherever those conversations need to happen, and to make the support more and more accessible. So that's why this year it's come into moving into both feet right here, having these conversations with incredible women like you, and making it more possible for more women to find the support they need. And you touched on something as well, that there are many women and men that just aren't available or open to questioning anything. And we know that they're not necessarily the people that we're here to support. Because what we both want, and all the women coming to your incredible retreat, is it's that availability to be open to finding out more. And that's where my whole ethos about empowered choices and empowered living comes from. Because if you don't know what's available, you don't know what you're choosing from. Imagine a whole buffet table with only one thing on it. What happens when you get another thing and another thing and another thing, and you can feel into what feels right for you? Everything that we're both about is about those empowered choices and for people to understand there is another way. And for me, everything about the breast cancer conversations is this gets to be different. The narrative gets to change. The narrative gets to be a narrative you can be included in and involved in, and we can talk about together. And those choices are what underpin empowered living, is knowing you've made that choice for yourself.
And all of this is why you're disrupting your in industry, disrupting what people have always associated with cancer and women, and empowering them to take back their power, make empowered choices, and change the trajectory of their lives, but also yours. Because I know that this is your passion and it comes from your soul. And but when you see all the impact that you have on others, then it really comes full circle. It's like, yes, I'm living into my purpose.
And that feels scary as hell, but also it also is empowering for me. And the other thing about that, when that happens, when we tap into our purpose and are able to deliver that to other people, you're not just delivering that to that one person that you impact, that you connect with. And certainly from a breast cancer perspective, when I am supporting one woman who's feeling more confident, more empowered, she walks differently, she talks differently, she feels differently, she is not racked with guilt and fear, and she's not away, she's not pacing the floor every night. Imagine the impact that then has on the children in the house and the partners in the home, when what you're witnessing isn't somebody who's very, very ill, who is absolutely a different person than they were only a week ago, and that is really, really, really struggling. That when that woman is no longer really struggling, I'm not saying it all goes away, but She's coping with those emotions better. She's not necessarily as anxious. She's able to do more bedtimes because she's just physically able to do it, or she's emotionally able to do a bath time and a bedtime with her children rather than just cannot engage with anything at home at all, or is really struggling with that. That ricochets throughout the family home. And it means that the emotional and energetic impact of the trauma of the whole thing also doesn't have such a massive imprint on everybody else within that home and other people coming into the home, parents coming in, watching their child go through this. You know, all of that, all of these conversations around that support that one person that we connect to, and then the next one, and then the next one, and everything in the work you're doing is that you imagine the people that are going home from your retreat, that feeling they get not only ricochets throughout their entire life, going to ricochet throughout their home for months after because of how they feel and what you created.
Yes, this is my biggest desire, is when I thought about impacting the individuals that have also been alongside the things that I have experienced in my past or are currently experiencing it. It's more than that, isn't it? It's also about creating the generational change, the generational change with their children, with their sisters, with their brothers, with their parents, and that the next people that come up after them. They saw how their parents handled these situations. And now that they have strategies and coping mechanisms to handle the situation, and if they find themselves in those same situations, then they're already prepared to handle it and to, as you said, thrive through it.
Yeah, that generational conversation is massive. It's a whole other conversation. And even just like in the minutiae of what happens in my home, if my son doesn't feel great, or if he's feeling a bit anxious about something, or if there's a physical something going on with him, which to be fair, since we started this whole thing, has happened less and less and less and less and less and less. He will ask me to reach for something that's completely natural. He'll be like, I need an oil for this, or I need a something, or can I have a juice? As in a juice, not a bought juice from the shop. But and also, you know, the little things, the green cleaning, they're not using any chemicals in our home. He knows how to make a green cleaning. He knows how to make a cleaning spray. He can use it. There's no toxins. It's not dangerous for him. So thinking about how he goes on into his life, for him, it would be really strange to go into a supermarket and buy loads of plastic bottles full of rubbish that's going to not only impact his well-being and his family's well-being, but going into the earth. So that generational change is massive. All of these conversations go way beyond just us. They go into our homes, but they go into our children's homes as they grow as well. And yes, they'll make their own empowered choices, but at least we've given them the alternatives and brought them up with those to reach for certain things of, we've got a headache. Get a really big drink of water. Let's start there. Rather than that first impulse be, I can't deal with the pain. We've got to do something quickly. We need to take something, get it out of a. I don't have a medicine cabinet anymore. I have a cupboard that has loads of natural stuff in it that we use whenever we need to use it. It's a whole other conversation about the generational thing, but you're right. And from a cancer conversation, if we bring it that back there, that cancer conversation gets to be, if a child is seeing their parent go through this experience calmer than they would have been otherwise, the impact on them is way less. I had a conversation, my son was 5 when I was diagnosed, and I'm having conversations with him now. He's 10 about that time. He doesn't remember it as a really traumatic time, and I know I can work with that whole experience, the whole of the guilt and everything we carry. You know, he doesn't remember it that way because I did everything in my power that it wasn't a traumatic time for him. But if it had been really traumatic for me, if I had had to be hospitalized in between every chemotherapy, if I'd have been gone from home multiple, multiple times, I imagine that my husband's anxiety would have been going through the roof. That would impact what's going on in the house and the energy in the house. That would have been a very different experience to me. And that's just a tiny little example. That if anyone going through a major health challenge, whether it's in my world, in the cancer world, or in the world of the women that you and the men that you support, is that we're not just supporting that individual.
Exactly. You're supporting the entire family and generations to come. Rachel, I am so honored that you came back with us today and shared all of your unique insights and the things that you've been through and the work that you're doing and the impact you're creating and the inspiration and that you're cultivating, not just in me, but in all of our listeners as well. And it has been a true honor to have you back here on Step Into Your Sunshine.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute honor to be here, and I really appreciate you inviting me, and it's wonderful to spend this time with you. A very, very inspiring person yourself.
Thank you so much. For all of our listeners, our new episodes drop Monday and Thursday at 8 p.m. French time. I look forward to having you back with us next week.